Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Apologies that we are running a minute late. The Trump peace plan is back in the news after a TV interview conducted by Jared Kushner. When do we expect to hear more about it? There's been so much talk, but no details.
This was a TV interview that was conducted yesterday on Monday by Sky News in Arabic, although I don't think that Jared Kushner speaks very good Arabic, so I'm guessing it was probably translated, but on the Arabic channel of Sky News anyway. And one of the ironic statements that Kushner made was that the U.S. has managed to keep a large part of the plan secret. I don't think we know very much about it at all. I think it's all just been speculation, and a lot of the speculation doesn't really seem to have added up to very much. And so, you know, the fact that so little has really been revealed about this police plan makes people wonder if there's actually anything to it at all. In terms of the timing, though, I think it was really Naftali Bennett who fired back with a video. Of course, this is all election speak now. Let's get to remember that even though Naftali Bennett was a minister in the Netanyahu government, at the moment the gloves are off because we're fighting an election soon, and obviously Naftali Bennett is eager to get as many seats for his new party as he can. And so he released a video immediately in which he said the following. Kushner's words prove what we already know, that the day after the elections, the Americans will push the Netanyahu-Lapid-Gantz government to allow the establishment of a Palestinian state on Route 6, to agree to the division of Jerusalem, and Netanyahu will be forced to acquiesce. Those were the words of Naftali Bennett. So what we understand from Naftali Bennett is a few things. First of all, that is expecting Netanyahu to get into government with Lapid and Gantz, an interesting concept in itself, but also that there seems to be some coordination in his view between the Trump government and Netanyahu that effectively is delaying the reveal of this particular peace plan until at least after the election. And then once the election has taken place, the peace plan will be revealed, and it will be revealed in a way that won't necessarily reflect very positively on Netanyahu and on the position that Netanyahu is taking vis-a-vis the Palestinians, particularly going into the next election, and that he feels that Netanyahu will be forced to eat some humble pie once President Trump reveals that he's going to be forcing the Israeli government to do what effectively Netanyahu is currently advocating not to do, which is the establishment of this Palestinian state in certain territories. And, of course, the whole issue of the division of Jerusalem. Now, one of the things that was spoken about in the interview is the fact that the borders, apparently, this is going to be focusing on drawing the borders of Israel. That was the quote by Kushner, that the peace plan is really going to be talking about drawing lines and borders of, and I guess land swaps, which has also been discussed in previous negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. The fact that, of course, Iran continues to be one of the greatest threats in the region. So all of this is becoming a little bit intriguing, because now we're getting snippets about the fact that it's really focusing on drawing the borders more than anything else. The borders may well include drawing the borders of Jerusalem between Israel and a future Palestinian state. But I have to say that when you look at the political parties who are fighting the upcoming election and the positions that they're taking on the Palestinian issue, and let's not forget that as far as the Israeli public is concerned, the Palestinian issue is a very minor point of relevance to that upcoming election. But when you look at the various political parties, there are a surprising number of parties who are going about saying that a Palestinian state at this time, and maybe even ever, is really not a realistic expectation. So, you know, we clearly have some sort of a mismatch between where Israeli politics is seeing things and potentially where the U.S. government may be coming from on this one.
Right. I guess those are the most sensitive issues will be around places like Jerusalem.
Well, absolutely. Jerusalem will probably be the most sensitive issue. I think in terms of other parts of the territory where, you know, there clearly are sensitivities as well. The next kind of biggest sensitivity will clearly be areas where there is quite a large center of Jewish, current Jewish population, people living there. which are territories which are being claimed by the Palestinians for their state, and by the way, which already have been discussed, as I said, as part of land swaps. So places like Gush Etzion and Ariel and Ma'ale Adumim and places like that, where there's a very large center of Jewish existence going on there, those areas will probably be formed part of land swaps. And of course, the next most controversial issue is going to be, well, can Jews actually live in a future Palestinian state? Mm, that's going to be an interesting concept to
absolutely
to
look. The history has not you know, it is not certainly not on the side of that being the case. You know,
well, it's not only the history, Howard, but in fact, I mean, current statements are supporting that as well, because you know, the Palestinian Authority has unashamedly said that they will not have Jews living in a Palestinian state, and more than that, there is this policy that is being followed by the Palestinian Authority, where people who have the audacity, in inverted commas, to sell land to Jews, which may form part of a future Palestinian state, are actually punished. There is some sort of a law against it within the Palestinian Authority. So, you know, there is a clear and unequivocal position against the possibility of Jews living in a future Palestinian state. There's no doubt about that.
Right, absolutely. Moving on, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Zarif has resigned. Now, this happened, I saw late yesterday, but very, very little comment about it. What is going on here?
Well, so I don't even know how much we can believe about this, to be honest with you, because it seems to be so unofficial, and apparently the resignation was actually announced by him on his Instagram account, of all things. You know, now let's just think about Iran for a minute and how they view social media. And this was actually announced on Instagram, which is very, very weird indeed. Look, Mohammad Zarif has certainly been the face of the Iranian government in international politics over an extended period of time. And we certainly associate the 2015 nuclear deal that was struck with the world powers in Iran. We associate that with him. He was Iran's representative. He was the face of Iran. He was the one who negotiated this. And, you know, one has to say, didn't do a bad job of the negotiation on behalf of Iran. Mm. So the question is, what now? Why is it that he's now been forced to resign, or that he's chosen to resign? And, you know, there seems to be no answer to this. I don't know whether this indicates some sort of a fallout within the regime in Iran with the Ayatollahs, with something going on politically in Iran. I mean, let's state things as they are. The Iranian regime does not have a particularly strong position locally within Iran. They rule by terror, by fear, rather than by right. And, you know, when it comes to elections, the Iranians are forced to vote in a way that they might not necessarily wish to do so if the situation was free and fair. And we've seen that there's been a huge uprising on the streets of Iran against the regime and against what's been going on, because people are really feeling the suffering, I think mostly as a result of the sanctions that were imposed by the international powers against Iran, and now some of which have been re-implemented recently. So it's not exactly clear why Zarif has chosen to resign, or indeed even if this Instagram message that was put out really does reflect that resignation. But this is, some of the newspapers are now saying that he has resigned. I mean, he did live in the United States from the age of 17. He was a student, and he subsequently went on to be a diplomat at the United Nations. So he does have some sort of international credentials. He does understand the culture and the thinking of the international community probably as well as anybody else in Iran, in that Iranian regime. So I think we're going to watch this very, very carefully indeed, because if Mohammad Zarif does represent a slightly more pragmatic wing to the Iranian regime, and he is gone now, it does beg the question as to in which direction the Iranian regime is moving and what will happen as a result of Zarif not being there anymore. Even though, you know, as I say, he was the face of Iran and he does represent this nuclear power in every sense of the word, it seems that on a personal level, the international community had a reasonable relationship with Zarif. And he was somebody who could be spoken to and who could relay messages from the international community back to the Iranian regime. If he's gone now, it's not clear who will fill that role in the future.
I just wonder if we check up on him in the next few months to see if he's still alive.
Or whether he might not have moved completely to the other side of the fence and taken up residence in the United States again or elsewhere. I mean, that's, you know, that's going to be another interesting thing to see. I mean, my question that I ask myself is whether he's finally realized that all of what he's been representing and all of what he's been doing on the Iranian regime is just a lie and that he can't live with that anymore and he's decided that he wants to be shot of that. I don't know. You know,
but let's not use that expression, be shot of something.
Well, be gone of it. Let's say that exactly. But the report that I saw came from Dubai. And, you know, again, it's an interesting, just little addition to the story, you know, still within the Gulf area. We're going to have to watch this carefully and just see how this might affect, the stability in the Middle East in general.
Absolutely. Finally, we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to quickly get an update on this, that the Israeli lunar craft Bereshit has experienced technical issues. What is the current status?
Well, you know, we spoke a little bit about the launch of Bereshit just before it was launched. It was ultimately launched on Friday morning with great excitement in the presence of Prime Minister Netanyahu. The great thing about Bereshit is that Israel will, if this is successful, become only the fourth country in the world to succeed in landing a module on the moon. Little Israel, as opposed to the big China, the big former Soviet Union, and the big United States. They are the three countries that have succeeded in doing so up until now. And apparently NASA could have put this lunar module together, the same one that that Israel managed to construct, except for 15 times the price that Israel managed to do it for.
Wow.
So there was a lot of excitement, a lot of intrigue, a lot of interesting things that were loaded on board this lunar module, including a copy of the Declaration of Independence, a copy of the Torah, a copy of Hatikva, some very, very near and dear things to Israelis and to the Jewish nation in general that were going to be lodged on the moon, interestingly. Unfortunately, we heard yesterday that there were some technical problems, that there was some sort of a maneuver that had been planned for the spacecraft, and instead that it had performed some sort of an involuntary reboot of the system, and there was some an automatic deactivation of the system. And at the moment, we don't really know what the current situation is, other than to say that besides this particular very localized problem, the rest of the spacecraft system seemed to be working very well. So we hope that somehow there will be a way of recovering from this technical difficulty, and that Bereshit will still continue to land in the Sea of Serenity planned for April the 11th. So we will keep watching the situation with certainly a lot of pride when the spacecraft was launched from Cape Canaveral early on Friday morning. And let's hope that these technical difficulties will not affect its path towards the moon and towards putting Israel into real history where space travel is concerned.
Absolutely. And that's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for your insight and for your update. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow. It is 8 o'clock.